Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Federation. With us today are Deacon Gerald Robinson and his wife, Mary, who will speak to us about the joys of life in a large family. Welcome, Deacon and Mary.
It's great to be here, Maria. Thanks for having us.
Hello, Maria.
Hi, it's so wonderful to have you with us today. So let's start out by asking, Deacon, why did you decide to write a book?
Well, that's kind of a long story, but I'll make it short in the interest of time. My father-in-law was very instrumental in our life. In fact, he was in our book because of their help with us as we had a family that was growing. And he used to say, you know, Jerry, you have to use your talents to bond with your children. And so I had written a book way back in the 1990s on technology, and I thought, well, I'll write a book with each of my children. Well, I realized I bit off more than I could chew, because that is 11 children, and I was never going to finish. And I actually conceded the fact that I was not going to get it done. And then there was a Sunday. It was the first Mass of Father Sam Du Bois. After his first Mass at our parish, I was talking with Deacon Tom Lang and Carla, his wife, and we were just having fun telling stories. And he said, Jerry, you got to write a book. And so I was like, that's it. I went home that night and literally wrote the book in 4 days and finished it. And that is The Joy of Children, which we published in 2016. And it was a gift to our kids, really, because it has a chapter for each of them in there about each of their arrivals, we'll say, in some cases. With our adopted children, and of course, the births of the ones we've had conventionally. So that's the background to the book.
That's wonderful. And I'm amazed that you were able to write the book so quickly. That's incredible.
It was on the top of my mind. I told the story so many times. It just came out. That's why I knew it was right to do, because God would not allow me to do something like that so quickly and so well in so short a time. Because with 11 kids, we're always short of time. So 4 days was just about the budgeted schedule we had.
And what kinds of reactions do you get when people find out about the size of your family?
Oh,
I mean, I can go first, Mary, or you want to go?
I think from my perspective, taking them different places, the doctor's office, shopping, out to playgrounds, the initial reaction is, oh, you know, what play group do you have today? Or what daycare do you work for? And when the expression comes that they're my children, there is a bit of awe or surprise. And then, of course, subsequent questions as to, you know, the how, what, where.
Well, I mean, the how, they always comment on the how, right? They say, you know, when we had a bunch of them so young, the common reaction would be, you know how to fix that, don't you? And I'm sitting there going, I don't think we're broken. It looks like we're not broken. In fact, there's a boatload of kids coming, and that's the way God wanted it. So I think when they were younger, because they were so close together, at one point we had 10 children 9 years old and under. So we had 10 children within 9 years, birthdays, and people would gawk. And I mean, there would be people at the Home Depot giving me gift cards just because I was walking around. And then there were sometimes some people would comment negatively as if we were a burden to society. And that actually happened multiple times where they said, how could you burden society like this? And that was the unfortunate things, but most of the interactions have always been positive.
And do you have any advice for couples who are starting out who are thinking they might want to have a big family?
I just go for it. I tell you, when we got married, I was, of course, wanting to set a foundation, and I was worried, do we have enough money, you know? And Mary was like, you know, let's have children. And I was sitting there, and not that we would have inhibited God's design, we would not have done that, but if God said, hey, Jerry, you have an extra 2 years before I'm going to send one your way, I said, thank you, God. But it turned out that within only a few months of being married, we learned we were pregnant, and that started the parade. And I think the openness piece was very significant, because it's good to give yourself over to God's divine providence. If he's the designer, we should trust in the designer. We're the designed, not the designer. And so if he made it so that he wanted to give us gifts, because he's a participant too in creating life, where we give the biological material, we'll say, he inputs the soul. And if he's a part of that committee, we could never block him out of his vote in the committee. In fact, his vote counts the most, by a mile. So we just were open to life at that point. And I think for all families and parents who are considering how open a life they should be, don't overthink it. God will provide. And children and families are a path to holiness. And parents should realize that they're not going to be able to script it all out. So I don't want to dominate the answer, Mary. I mean, that's what my advice would be as a nervous dad. That would be my advice. But mom was always better at momming than I was at dadding. So, I mean, I don't know if you have any advice.
Advice for large families, someone considering large family, I would say to just trust. Each family's not going to look the same. And I think until child number three, I was always worried about whether my kitchen was clean or the dust balls under the couch. And I think after that point, the focus really became the children and my husband, of course, being primary. However, just trusting and knowing that as a couple, that you are going to be able to weather that and to raise them together is very encouraging.
Yeah, she says the husband, of course, and in chapter two of the book, I tell the story of when I realized I lost my spot in the bet, and it was only 5 days after Henry was born, our oldest. But I'm like, wait. It's me 30 years to earn that spot of growing and maturing, and within 5 days he took my spot in the bed. No. So literally the whole chapter's about me trying to convince my wife that spoiling our son so early in his life is bad for him and that I deserve the spot. And really I learned that that was all wrong. And it was a great lesson early in my parenting life to realize how right she was, because he was born and he needed her.
Yes.
And he needed her more than I needed her. So yeah. I needed as a dad to go, yep, that's the way it is. So just trust.
Go ahead, Marie. Can you share with us what led you on the road to adoption?
Yeah, I get
oh, that was.
Go ahead. If you want to tell, I mean, it started with me to a degree. Sure. I mean, so I had an uncle very influential in my life who I lived with after college. And him and his wife could not have children. So they adopted two. And one of them was from Hong Kong way back when I was young. And it was a fascinating event for us. And when I moved in with them, I mean, I really got to know my cousins well. So I really had in my mind that adoption would be something I would want to do as a parent if my wife, my future wife, who I had not known at the time, would be okay with it. So when Mary and I decided that we were right for each other, I talked to her about adoption, and she was all game. So we had that thought in our mind that we would be open to adoption. And it was after three children we had. Now, we got married late. So Mary was 31. I was 30, and we had three children. So by the time she was 35, she had actually had multiple miscarriages, and we had a gap in births. And we thought, well, maybe that's just it. Maybe that's all God wants us to have conventionally. And so at that point, adoption came into the conversation, and we decided to adopt.
Beautiful. And what has been the best aspect of your adoption experiences?
The best.
All of it.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah. The best. Boy, how can they can't. So we've adopted three, Maria, of our 11. So we call it conventional and unconventional. That has been our terminology. And we just, God gave us three children unconventionally and gave us eight conventionally. From my perspective, I mean, the best aspect or the aspect in general is that it completed our family. And we didn't have a designer approach. We didn't sit back and go, okay, we need 11 now. That absolutely didn't come into our minds. We just felt that it was right to stay disposed to what God's callings were. And he at that moment called us to adoption. But it's funny because literally we decided to adopt two. I actually wanted just to adopt one. I'm in San Diego. I'm calling Mary to just confirm we have all the money in the right place and all sorts of things. And
this is when we had three.
We had three at the time, and mm-hmm. our oldest was three or two, I can't remember. And Mary, I'm in San Diego. I'm on the phone with Mary, and I say, okay, so let's finish this process. And she goes, Jerry, would you be open to two? And I'm like, wait a second. What happens if we get pregnant? So she's on the other side of the phone. She didn't say anything. I just heard crying. And at that point, I said, two it is. So literally after... I mean, it was probably like 2 weeks after we put all the money down, signed all the papers. In comes Mary into my office, marching as she always did, with a slight grin on her face. And she laid a positive pregnancy test on my desk. And at that point, I'm like, oh, my gosh. So we're going to have three kids in the same year. But again, I think when a set of parents stops thinking that they have to script everything, and they give it over to God, God will provide them all the joy they need. Even though we don't know exactly what's going to happen, even though that was stressful, and it was hard. The best aspect is that God always provided, and it strengthened our faith in God, in my opinion, that he would be there for us no matter what.
And Mary, did you want to add anything about having the three in 1 year?
Oh, that was quite the adventure. I was very excited. And, you know, it was quite scary, to be honest, because the pregnancy did follow the three miscarriages, which brings on a certain level of concern and worry, because you're always wondering, okay, is today the day that something bad is going to happen? Is tomorrow the day? And I'm not sure that ever leaves with any subsequent pregnancies after miscarriages. However, that being said, you know, the timing was what it was. And just knowing and trusting that this was going to be the path that our family was taking. And the timing was, quite frankly, impeccable, miraculous almost. We didn't travel to Kazakhstan until 12 weeks, and I was back shortly before 20 weeks. And so
in the court hearing, I literally stood with my arms on my side so it would cover her baby bump. We did not want the judge to see if we were pregnant or not, because there was an aversion to large families in a former Soviet republic, which Kazakhstan was.
Yes.
But it all worked out, and there we were with six kids, four and under, five and under. I think 2004 is a blur to me, but five and under, six kids, five and under.
Wonderful. You are listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher. We are speaking with Deacon Gerald Robinson and his wife, Mary. Let's go back and talk about miscarriages. These occur so often, and yet we don't talk a lot about them in our society. And I would like to know, what advice would you have for someone struggling in the aftermath of a miscarriage?
Well, I think I'll go first on this one, Deacon, but I think it's difficult. Miscarriages are difficult and the grief is real. We have to understand that there is a reason to mourn the miscarriage of a child because your child is no longer with you. Some people have been planning or hoping for this child for months or years, and others, it may be a spontaneous pregnancy, but nonetheless, it is a loss. And miscarriage in our society typically represent a facet of our life that we may not be familiar with. It's always happening to some other woman. It's always happening to, you know, maybe an aunt or a sister or a family friend. So when it does happen to you, we're shocked. We're in a state of shock. You know, why me? Why did it happen to me? What did I do to cause this? How did it happen? How could I have avoided this from happening? And unfortunately, sometimes there's no answers. And so we do have to take the time to grieve. Some days it'll be okay. We can put it in its proper place and it'll be okay. And yet other days it's just going to be terrible. And we do have to learn to be patient with ourselves. We need to find, I suggest to people finding someone who can relate. Considering, as you said, miscarriages are very common in our society. 20 to 30% of pregnancies end in miscarriages. And talking to someone else, you may be surprised to find that other people have experienced it also. And so your feelings can be validated. I think it's also difficult because women nowadays know so soon that they're pregnant. And the news can go out very quickly. And then up until 12 weeks, miscarriages can occur. And that's very difficult to come forth with that message once people know that you're pregnant. And so I always encourage people to have hope because many times subsequent pregnancies will end full term. Some do not, as in our case, we had three miscarriages following the three births, which were quite uneventful. And so my first miscarriage, I couldn't believe this was happening. Like it always happened to somebody else, but the loss is so real. And I think we just have to be patient with ourselves as you go through that grieving process and mourn that child that is lost.
So many people have different ways to handle that. I mean, I'm a dad, right? So God designed it a certain way. A mom really gets to know the child in a very unique way before it's born that a dad just can't relate to. And even though the concept of a new child is there and it's my child, she physically is caring for that child in what she eats and how she works and to what extreme she goes. Many people will deal with the loss differently. We didn't name our children. I think we've had seven miscarriages total. We didn't name our children or anything like that, but we do acknowledge them. In fact, after every child, I would get Mary a plaque with a prayer on it. Mm. It's the prayer for the unborn. Mm. And it has a picture of a saint on it, and it's a plaque that hangs in our house for every child. So we have 11 plaques, but we actually have a 12th. And the 12th is for all of our children who we never saw their face. And we're Catholic, so we believe that God in his mercy, we have to trust these souls to God in his mercy. That, you know, that's just like the catechism says, that maybe in some extraordinary way, he offers them an eternity that we would want for them. So that's where our faith lies, and they're a part of the fabric of our family, for sure.
How would you respond to a young person today, and I think this is often the case among this generation, who's afraid of having children, let alone a large family?
Just go for it. Afraid you everyone can rise to the occasion. With God, nothing's impossible. Grace builds on nature, and God will shower that couple with a grace that they don't even know they can achieve. Now, folks just seem to think in the way they are and what their limitations are based on the way they've always been. And it's amazing how having a dynamic change like this amount of children can change how far you go, how far you stretch. It changes you in all good ways, really, because you have to manage it. So I would say be open to it, because you know you can't go, you can't get season tickets to the Eagles and have as much fun as having 1 week with a child in your house and all the things they do and all the fun they have, and they bring you, they make you belly laugh where you didn't even know you were ready to laugh. You know, kids are just a gift. And I would say to any parent sitting there going, I'm going to script it, I'm scared of having a large family, stop. Don't be scared. It's okay. God will take care of you. Just trust.
And I think also, sometimes I think the reality people experience is different than the fear they imagine. Mm-hmm. And so you can sit and you can read and you can talk and you can think and you can watch other people and how they parent. But the reality is when you have children of your own, I think you really do learn and to just work with the children and have just fun, to let go of some of those fears that you had and realize that it is going to be okay. And these children do need you and you need them. And having a family is just such a wonderful part of life.
What can people do to help promote adoption?
Yeah, promoting adoption, I think just showing openness to it, right? So life is precious. And sometimes circumstances for some aren't ideal. So there's, for each child, each young life, they do deserve the right to grow up in what God designed for them, and that's a family. And so openness to adoption and recognizing that every life is precious, they're the cornerstones of promoting adoption. But the other part of it is each family and each set of parents should recognize that adoption's not just for the families who can't have natural, conventional children. Because God may be calling you to add others to your family unconventionally that were always meant for your family. And so there's a disposition that folks need to have to God's divine providence in being open to the fact that maybe there's more who can fit into our family. So that would be my advice for promoting adoption. Life is precious, and God may want you to take on more.
And I remember a good family friend of ours, they had four conventionally, three they adopted unconventionally. And I remember speaking to her one day and she said, you know, Mary, it just bothers me because we have a table that seats 10 and there's a seat empty.
Mm-hmm.
She said, do you think we should try to go and adopt again? And I said, well, think of it this way. In 10 years, would you regret not adopting a child? Or would you regret adopting a child? She said, oh, I'd regret not adopting. I said, then you need to try. You need to go for it. If it falls through, it was not meant to be. However, the thought that it is in, it's something you consistently think about it every mealtime. You need to research it and you need to move forward with it.
You miss 100% of the shots you never take.
Yes.
And that's Wayne Gretzky. So, I mean, as a set of parents, how can we teach our children to take steps and leaps when we ourselves are trying to control our outcomes so much? They only learn the wrong thing there. I really believe that. So,
yes. And what is the message you'd like people to take away from your book?
Well, I wrote the book again for my children to a degree. I hope it's a good record for them. But the book is, it's funny. It really is, because it just has been a lot of fun. So there's been all sorts of things that we've managed as a couple with this many children. And I would just say, you can do it. And it'll be fun when you do.
No, that is true. That is true. What to take away from the book? I only read the book. I have a wonderful writer as my reading. However, just joyful, organized chaos.
I don't know if it's even organized. I'm sorry. No, it's... but I've lived in the chaos. But
okay, orderly.
It's the right kind of chaos. Because you yield some control, and that's good. You know, people, as adults, we can tend to try to keep our hands around too many things. And kids can really teach you another path. And so being open to it, it really helps you think a little differently. And it is the path to holiness, if that's your vocation.
That is lovely. And with just about a minute left, what can people do to help families today?
Well, this is a long answer to me, because I think right now our culture is starting to water down what a family looks like and saying it's a community or a government intervention. I truly think that we need to get back to basic principles. God created the family first. And so the family should be the core of society, and parents should have the requisite authority and freedom to raise their kids, because every family's custom made. God has, every sets of parents have their own charisms. All those children have their own personalities. There's no government program or, you know, law or community that can supersede the parents in the role of their children. So what can people do to help families is just give them the room to operate the way they need to.
Absolutely. I want to thank you so much, Deacon Gerald Robinson and Mary Robinson, for speaking to us today about the joys of life in a large family.
It was great to be here, Maria.
Thank you, Maria.
Thanks for inviting us.
You've been listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, the Keystone State affiliate of National Right to Life. We have nearly 40 chapters all throughout the Commonwealth, which are dedicated to preserving and protecting the sanctity of innocent human life. Thank you so much for joining us today. We couldn't do it without you. And remember, there is always, always, always a reason to choose life. Bye, everybody.